So, thank you everybody for coming. I just want to thank the Frat Kollel for helping me. We've been doing this for 20 years. Hoshana Rabba learning. And this year we worked how we're going to do it. So thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Arthur, for helping with for the technical details. Learning tonight is also for Moshe ben Yosef Elimelech, Zichron Levracha, and Yitzchak Tzvi ben Moshe, them, and before Shlema for Yehuda and Shena Chava. Thank you, Jeffrey. All yours.
Okay, let me do my part of the technical stuff. Okay, and I'm going to live on Facebook. Okay, so Moedim L'Simcha. This is, I'm still not. I do more Zoom than I know to do it, but it's still very, 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 very strange. But I'm glad that the Tiferet Avot and the Efrat Kollel have invited me to kick off tonight's learning. And so I decided that since I'm kicking it off and other people have other sort of going different directions, we should actually talk about Hoshana Rabba. Might be a thing. For those of you who are on Zoom, the Makorot are on the screen. For those of you who are watching through Facebook Live, they're not. But I will announce what I'm reading from as I go. Hoshana Rabba is a funny holiday. It's a funny holiday because it is. If you read Chumash, at least it doesn't really exist. In terms of the dynamic of Sukkot, take a look at, and I will be going back to Latun Ashkenaz and Sephard, I can't help it. If you take a look at Vayikra Kav Gimel, which is the most important of the Parshiyot HaMoedim, chapter 23, verses 41 to 43, then you come up with the following. It says, V'chagotemoto chag l'Hashem, and you should celebrate Sukkot as a holiday for God. In fact, Sukkot is the quintessential holiday. Chazal, when they refer to Sukkot, just say Chag or Hechag. And we know they automatically know that we're talking about Sukkot. You celebrate 7 days, Bashana, Chukat Olam L'Dorotechem, for an eternal ordinance forever for all of your generations. Bachodesh HaShvi Tachogu Oto, you celebrate in the seventh month. Basukot Teshvu Shivat Yamim, you sit in the Sukkot for 7 days. And everybody sits in Sukkot 7 days, so that everybody knows that we went out of Egypt in Sukkot. The holiday ends. In other words, it's 7 days of Sukkot. That's it. If there's anything which is unique about Sukkot is the fact that at the very end, there's another holiday which is tacked on, which is a separate holiday. You have a holiday at the end, afterwards, after Sukkot is all over, that is of a totally different character, has no relation to Sukkot. You're not supposed to go into the Sukkah. I mean, all right, in Chutzlar, it's a business because you're not sure it's the seventh day or the eighth day. So, Litvaks and Litvaks and Hasidim have different customs, whether you should eat all your meals in the Sukkah, which was my practice when we lived in Chutz Laaretz, or you just say Kiddush, but in principle, we're talking about something totally different. And Rashi says this is a whole new ball game. Sukkot is over, and now Shmini Atzeret is for like an after party, just for the family, because God says, you've been with me since Rosh Hashanah. I would like to hang around for one last after party. So therefore, Hoshana Rabba is just the end of Sukkot. It apparently has no significance whatsoever. So that's, I mean, it really is not a thing. So that's number one. So where does it come from? Well, one place, one thing which is associated with Hoshana Rabba, and really is its first the first mention of anything special going on the seventh day of Sukkot, has to do with taking or beating the willow branches. Now, not the willow branches from the lulav, but rather from the separate set of willow branches. Now, this is already mentioned not as a popular practice, but as something that was exclusively done in the temple. And a tremendous amount of significance was attributed to this practice. Take a look at the Sifra. The Sifra is a halachic matters from the early time of the Tanaim, reflecting early traditions. The Torah says that you should take Ulekachtem lachem bayom arishon priets hadar. You first take an esrog, a beautiful tree, fruit, kapot tamarim, lulav, enough eitz avot, and the branch of a thick branch tree, which is the hadas, varvei nachal. Varvei nachal is the willow. Says the Medrash. So Midrash Halacha, Abba Shaul Omer, Arvei Nachal Shtayim, Arava, you take two, or twice, actually it's two. You take, there are two mentions, Arvei Nachal, willows. You have to take them on two occasions. Arvei Nachal Shtayim, twice. Why? Arava Lalulav. Okay, that's fine. But I would have actually said two branches of the Arava for the lulav, which is what we do. That's not what he says. What he says is Baravala Migdash. You take a whole separate thing that you have use an Arava for the in the temple. Why? I mean, how much pollen do we need? I mean, you know, my daughter, for example, is terribly allergic to pollen, and the last thing she needs is more growth around here. So, you know, why? An indication as to significance, we haven't seen why yet, but an indication as to the tremendous significance which is attributed to using the willow branch. You find in the Gemara in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Menbet on Mendalad Amud Aleph, Sukkah it's 44a, says that there is a machloket between as to the origins and significance of holding the Arava in the Beit HaMikdash initially, between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi lived, they were both students of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. They lived in the end of the second century, beginning of the third century. They were the first generation of Amoraim, of teachers in the Jerusalem Talmud. Chad Amar once said, Arava Yesod Nevi'im. The idea that you're supposed to use a willow branch on somewhere in Sukkot, we don't know where yet, somewhere on Sukkot, in addition to the lulav and esrog, that was ordained by the prophets. And Fachad Amar Minhag Nevi'im. It was a custom of the prophets. What's the difference? The question is whether it's just a custom. It's, you know, severity, and the other one says no. This is according to this opinion. This is a real ordinance. Now, when we talk about the prophets, we don't know. It doesn't say which prophet. Rashi says Chagai Zechariah Malachi, the last prophets at the beginning of Bayit Sheni, but we know it's what the terminus ad quem is. The last prophet was Malachi, died in the fifth century. So you're talking about something which is not recent. That goes back all the way as far as Torah Shebaal Peh memory is concerned. To the beginning of Bayit Sheni, and that's important. Which means that in fact the Talmud is already asserting that this practice of using willows in the temple is not part of the written law. It's an affirmation of its status as part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Gemara continues and says in fact that's the case that. Eser Netiot, that a certain law regarding Kalayim, when you can plant and when you can't, Arava, taking the using the willow branch in the service in the temple, Venisuch Hamayim, and the libation of water, Ara Halachala Moshe Mesinai. In other words, it goes all the way back to Moses, that one of the hoariest antiquity are these three practices. Now, so then the Gemara says, but you just said that the prophets instituted, they said, no, we forgot them, and they reinstituted. All right, that's not the issue. The issue over here is the fact that by pairing the taking of a willow with the libation of water on the altar, the Talmud is essentially underlying the fact that just as the libation of water on the altar was the quintessential expression of extra biblical traditions that were associated with the Torah Shebaal Peh,
And we're really at the center of the argument between the Pharisees and the Sadducees and later and others, that Arava is also quintessentially Torah Sheba'al Peh. And therefore it has an extra cachet to it. The what's important over here also, by the way, the libation of the water, that was this whole, that was the big party. They had the first night and there was dancing and juggling and all kinds of stuff. That's why we have Smachot Beit, or we don't, but we usually have Smachot Beit Shoeva during Sukkot in memory of that. And it was such a serious point of contention between the powers that be in the temple, who were generally Sadducees, and the Pharisees, that the Talmud records a story that on one occasion, the high priest, who at the time was a Sadducee, took the water that had been brought from the Gihon at the bottom of Yir David and poured it on his feet, and the people responded by stoning him with their esrogim. So yeah, this was a very loaded issue, and apparently Arava was one of them. We still don't know why. But there is this tradition that taking a willow branch on Sukkot is a big deal. How did it work? What did they do? So here, with the Mishnah in the fourth parak, in the fourth chapter in Sukkah, Mishnayot 5 and 6 tells us the story. Mitzvat Arava, the commandment to take an Arava, a willow branch. Now notice, this would have to be parsed, but the apparent meaning of the Mishnah is that there is a mitzvah, the Rabbanan, whatever the case might be, to take an Arava, which underscores its importance. What would they do? Ketzad makom hayalam mata b'Yerushalayim. There is a place below Jerusalem, v'nikra Motza. Everybody comes up to Jerusalem from Route 1 knows that you go through Motza and you take a sharp left, and well, they've changed the road there so many times in the past 30, 40 years that it's hard to remember, but it's on the left. It's on the left hand. Motza, there's lower Motza, then there's upper class, higher Motza. There's a place called Motza, and they would go down. Yordim Lisham, they would go down there. Apparently, they had really lovely, lovely willow trees. Umelaktin Misham Marviot Shel Arava, and they would pick, you know, branches of Arava, and they would bring them up to the temple. That's now, if you consider where that is, that's a hike. I mean, that's below. That's way below. Bet Zayit, I mean, low Harnof. I mean, to get to the old city from there is a business. By the way, Motza is also famous for the place where they would go to harvest the Omer, the first measure of grain that they would offer on the first day of Chol Hamoed Pesach. Tell me about Motza that really did it. By the way, those of you who don't know, haven't been there, there's a lovely, lovely, lovely old shul there. Right off the road, and I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful place you should visit. Anyways, so they would take they would go down, they would harvest, they would cut down all of these willow branches, bring them to the old city. And they would set them up on the sides of the altar, of the big altar. And their heads would, at the tops of them would sort of be bent over. Al gabei mizbeach, so you decorate the mizbeach with these willows. They would blow the shofar, and then they would blow the trumpets, and then they would blow the shofar. B'chol yom. So in other words, they would do this every day. Every day of Sukkot was Arava. So what happened? We were talking about Shoshana Rabbah. What's got to do with this? Mekifim, but all b'chol yom, every day. Mekifim et mizbeach pamachat. They would walk around the mizbeach once. Vormim ana Hashem hoshiana. Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Rabbi Yehuda says, not only would they say these verses from the 118th Psalm, but Rabbi Yehuda said, Ani Vehu Hoshiana. Va'otoa Yom, and on Hoshana Rabbah, Mekifim et HaMizbeach Shiva Pa'amim, B'Shiva Pa'amim. They would walk around seven times, they would walk around the altar seven times, which is precisely what we do on Hoshana Rabbah. That's another issue. Bishat Petiratan, not when they die. In other words, when they leave them, they leave the temple on the seventh day, or they leave on actually every day. They say Yofi Lecha Mizbeach, Yofi Lecha Mizbeach. The altar is beautiful. It is so adorned with the aravot. And Rabbi Lezer says they would also say Omer Lecha Ulecha Mizbeach, Lecha Ulecha Mizbeach, to God and to you, the altar. Now the Arava apparently was. Now let's take a look at a couple of the issues over here. Number one, Why would they? What did they walk around with? What did they walk around saying? They walked around saying, "Save us," says Rabbi Yehuda. That's not the whole story. Ani v'hu hoshiana. Who's who? Who's who? Who? This sounds like the Abbott and Costello routine. Who's who? Who is part of God's name, the Tetragrammaton? And that's something else that's something Rabbi Eliezer also picks up on. What do we say? Leka ulecha mizbeach. Leka ulecha mizbeach. Now, in other words, as part of the service with the Aravot, we're invoking part of God's ineffable name. What is the day, the only time, that God's name is pronounced the way it's supposed to, according, we don't, no clear tradition anymore what that is, but what was the one time that was pronounced on Yom Kippur? In the context of the service, which included offering sacrifices on the altar for the atonement of all of Israel. You follow? So as a result, somehow these processions with the Arava expressed a sort of a last chance connection to Yom Kippur already then. Now, was it because the Aravot are bent and they signify humility? It's very possible. But it certainly also speaks to the fact in the next Mishnah, I'm not going to read it, I'm not going to read it out loud, that they would also beat Aravot, which is also a sign of maybe punishment, a sign maybe of certainly humility, so that at least as far as in the Beit HaMikdash, the use of the Arava was intimately connected with Yom Kippur and atonement and the altar and an intimate connection with God. God is unmediated when you recite his name.
Was everyone reciting his name? That's quite unusual, right? Already that's
no. They're saying parts of his name. They're saying Ani v'hu, which alludes to his name, and Anu l'ka v'enenu l'ka. They're not pronouncing the whole name, but they're using pieces of it to invoke the full recitation of the tetragram.
Would that be related
four letters?
The people, or I don't know, were the Kohanim saying this, or were there?
Yes, the Kohanim were saying. This is all a temple. We'll get to this. This is all a temple business. This is all about the temple. This is all about the service of the temple, which means interestingly, so we hear about the fact that you have a petek tov and pigut kvittel and so on. That this is the last chance. This is not a new thing. This is a business. This goes back. This sort of like last hint to Yom Kippur actually goes back to temple times. Now this practice with the willows, as I mentioned, became the quintessential, became something which was very, very important to the Pharisees and to those who the advocates of Torah Shebal Peh, specifically on especially on Hoshana Rabbah. The Tosefta in Sukkah, this is chapter 3, Halacha Al, overlaps the Mishnah we just read, but it's worth, says as follows, Lulav docha et haShabbat. You can take Lulav and Etrog, not in outside, but in the Beit HaMikdash. It's on Shabbos, falls on Shabbos, you can do it as well. The Kavshu Alea Baitusim. It once happened that the Baitus and the Sadducees, I won't go into who these people are, but they were the anti-Torah Shebal Peh party. They took, people brought, the people, I will read the whole thing. People brought their Aravot, or they were Aravot ready. So the Baitusim, Erev Shabbos, took big rocks and put them on top of the piles of Aravot. Why? In order that the people would come and wouldn't be able to use them, because rocks are what? Rocks are muktzah. Muktzah is also Torah Sheba'al Peh. The whole thing is a point of a tremendous point between the two groups. The Tosefta says that the Amei Haaretz came and they took them out anyways because they weren't exactly the most learned. But the point is that the use of the Aravot on Hoshana Rabbah and walking around with them and so on was a very big deal. And notice this Tosefta talks about the Arava not all day, all week long, but apparently everybody took the Arava. Or everybody. So take the Arava on the last day. Again, Hoshana Rabbah at this point is now already in time of the temple, is not a matter just of the priests. It's got to do with the average person as well. It becomes something much larger than a temple-oriented ceremony. Now, however, it only took place apparently in the temple. Which brings me to the next stage. All right, very nice. Okay, so in the temple, Hoshana Rabbah was a kind of second chance Yom Kippur. It alludes to Yom Kippur. We praise the Mizbeach that to give for being a source of forgiveness. And okay, very nice. Yerushalmi in Sukkah, chapter 4, Halacha Aleph, in the very beginning, tells us a funny story. Rabbi Simon Mafkid Le'ilein de Mechashvin. Rabbi Simon, already in the Talmudic period, commanded those who calculate. Okay? Calculate what? They're the ones who are calculating the calendar. It's calculating the calendar. We're talking, it's the tackle of the calendar. Yahavun datchun. Pay attention. De lo tavdun lo tikiata b'shabata v'lo arvata b'shabata. When you calculate what the calendar should be, make sure that Rosh Hashanah doesn't fall out on Shabbat, and also that Hoshana Rabbah should not fall out on Shabbat. The in adachaktun, and if you push to the wall and you have no choice, avdun tekiata. You can make it that Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat so that there would not be Tiat Shofar. Never, ever do that to avoid or to prevent Hoshana Rabbah and the Arava. Now, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a period, first of all, after the Korban. We're talking about a period which is after the destruction of the temple. Which means that, as with many, many other things, a lot of ceremonies that were associated with the temple were taken out of the temple, in line with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's general policy, although I don't think he was responsible for this, and brought into the synagogue. That's number one. Number two, it was accepted already. How and why, it's a whole discussion. I don't want to go into it, but it was accepted possibility that you don't blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat. Why? Let's assume that with the Bavli that you don't do that because you're afraid you'll carry it from place to place and you'll violate Shabbos, which is the general explanation. So for the same reason, if you don't want people carrying their aravot on Shabbat, for the same reason. So he says, if you're calculating now, when they started calculating the calendar, which again is exactly what date is difficult, but when they started calculating it, there was a certain degree of give to figure out what. Okay. It was possible to fix the calendar so that your Rosh Hashanah doesn't fall on Shabbos and Hoshana Rabbah doesn't fall on Shabbos. Now, Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, then the first day Sukkot falls on Shabbos, Lulav won't be Lulav, and Tanishmi Atzeret. But you could play with Rosh Hashanah Rabbah and he says, better to give up, better not to have Tkiat Shofar, Midoraisa anyways, than to give up Arava. Now, that's an amazing statement. Because the mitzvah of Tkiat Shofar is a biblical mitzvah. and the mitzvah of Arava at best was ordained by the prophets. So it's like a derabbanon, it's like a rabbinical ordinance on steroids. It's like it's like rabbinical plus. Wouldn't you think the other way? What do you derive from this? You derive from this, first of all, that the use of the Arava was so inbred, was so important to the people, and was such a degree that A, they continued doing it in their shuls. And secondly, because on the other hand, and the fact that they just sought it without it, they just attributed to it importance and spiritual significance that transcended even the Kiyat Shofar. Now, one could argue that they very well be because of the memories of the temple. The truth of the matter is that the synagogues, especially the synagogues in Eretz Israel, were viewed as not, I've said this more than once, if I wrote a book about this, were not just batei Knesset, they were not just batei Tefillah. Shuls are Mikdash Ma'at, 99, if you remember what Ivory Pure was, 99 and 44, 100% Beit Mikdash. Regard. They were meant to be literally portals to the Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash that's waiting to come down to the Beit HaMikdash that was still I strongly read when the Seger is over, obviously. Those of you who are watching from Israel. If you go to Migdal, which is north of Tveria, you'll see there there's a town which was uncovered, the town of Mary Magdalene, but it was a nice Jewish community, Magdalene. They uncovered a shul, and the shul in the middle of the shul has a stone, which is covered in temple references, pictures of the lulav and esrig and the menorah and things for the ketoret and all kinds of stuff. And it's pretty clear the reason it was there, a colleague of mine at Hebrew University confirmed this, is to make the point that this is really, it's the reality of this synagogue really goes to the temple. So when you go into the synagogue, you're really in the Beit HaMikdash in a very, very profound sense. So similarly, Arava had to come and apparently the same kind of a weight that they attributed continued afterwards. But we still haven't parsed this out yet. But before we do, I just want to take a small, break because it's just cute. Maimonides has a whole section of the Mishneh Torah, which he discusses the laws of how to calculate the new moon. And it's a long astronaut. You guys, anybody like me who's like numerically challenged, if you think you're having trouble with Erevin, you should try this on for size. It's very, very technical. And the Rambam finally gets down to the question of what are the rationales? Why is it that there are certain rules that characterize characterize the calendar? So he gets to the rule. There is a rule in the calendar, Lo Adu Rosh. The Rosh Hashanah can't fall on Sunday. It can't fall on Wednesday, and it can't fall on Friday. It can't fall on those days. Most of those possibilities are for a simple reason. You don't want Yom Kippur to fall either on Friday or on Sunday, so it shouldn't be. So that you shouldn't have 2 days of full Isur Melacha with Yom Kippur leading into Shabbos, or Shabbos leading into Yom Kippur. The Gemara is full of stories where that happened. It happened, but those things would happen when the calendar was still calculated based on or determined based on testimony. Once the mathematical formula came in and they were able had a certain amount of wiggle room, so we don't do that. So Rambam has a whole fancy astronomical reason because of the reason why the Rosh Hashanah can't fall on Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. And for the same reason why the Pesach can't fall on Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, because of the structure of the universe. And the Ravid says, I don't think so. He says, Mipnei ha, he says, the Rambam is too impressed with himself. Mipnei shamechaber hazeh mitgader ma'od. This is Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, chapter 7, halacha 7. This guy, he's very, very impressed with himself. Umitpa'er b'chokhma hazot. And he brags about just how a lock, what kind of a lock he has on as an astronomical knowledge. So he says, he says, I'm not an astronomer. I never learned astronomy. And my teachers also didn't learn astronomy. I didn't check him out. Usually he goes to the Mishnah Torah. He says, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong. He says, I'm not an expert. I'm not going to open my mouth. He could never be on Twitter. I'm not going to open my mouth about something that nobody knows about, that I don't know about. But, however, when I got to this statement where he explains the reason why Rosh Hashanah can't fall on Monday, on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and on Friday, and he says the reason is because of this whatever fancy schmancy astronomical reasons. No, that's not the reason. No, the last line. Vanu kibalnu. We have a tradition. The reason why we reject for a Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday for Rosh Hashanah is Mishum Yom Arava. It's because we don't want Hashanah Rabbah to fall on Shabbos, so that you wouldn't be able to walk around with the willows, and also you don't want Rosh Hashanah to come, you don't want Yom Kippur to fall on Friday or on Sunday or Motzei Shabbos. And he says the fact that he gives this whole baloney answer, he says, he's blowing smoke. It's a very interesting, you know, it's one of these things where the rabbi says, you know, I don't know what he was talking about till now, but now here I got him. So anyways, the point is, though, that Hashanah Rabbah kept its valence to such a degree, that the whole calendar was organized so you could have Hashanah Rabbah. It could be that the reason is because it could be because of the Yom Kippur connection. It's certainly possible. But there might be more to it as well. Something about Hoshana Rabbah moved Jews already in ancient times beyond what would have been expected. So I'm going to skip number 8, and I'm going to read you a passage from a Muslim book by a guy's name is Biruni. It's quoted. It was actually translated by the late Moshe Gil in a book called Sefer Yerushalayim Atkufa Muslimit Akduma. The Book of Jerusalem. Yad Ben Tzvi put out a series of books on the history of Jerusalem. This is volume, I think, 4, about the early Muslim period. And he writes as follows. On the last day of Sukkot, he says, which is the 7th day and the 21st day of the month, the Jews call that Arafah. Now, when you know the fact, we're all aware of the fact that Arabs, that in Arabic, B and P are interchangeable. He really means Arafa, Nikra Arafa. And by the way, his description is reliable. For the simple reason he's got no axe to grind in this. He's just describing what the Jews in Jerusalem do. It's the day of Arafa. Bo Amad Haslav, according to his tradition, that was the day that the quails came al Rashay B'nai Yisrael B'Midbar, Ubo Chag HaAtzeret. So he's a little confused here. Why is it called Yom HaRava? Mipnei Shebo Yitkansu HaYehudim Bahar Hara, which apparently refers to Har HaZeitim. Jews would, and we know this from other sources, Jews would flow from all over the diaspora on Hoshana Rabbah, Shebi Rushalai, to Har HaZeitim, Shebi Rushalayim, B'Torot Olim L'Regel, in order to be able to fulfill pilgrimage. Those who don't come, in parallel to this, Mikifim et Ha'orun, or they walk around the Ark, Asher B'Batei Knesiotehem, in their synagogues, Shehu Kamo HaManbar,
which is like the center stage in the mosque. What's going on? So we know from other sources that in fact Har HaZeitim had always had extra special significance. And in the period after the Churban, in the period after the destruction of the temple, took on added significance. First of all, under the Romans, except for the short period of maybe a short period of time in the life of Rabbi Meir and during the reoccupation of the country by Bar Kokhba, Jews were not allowed to go into Jerusalem, except according to some reports on Tisha B'Av, they were allowed to go into onto Har HaBayit in order to be able to bewail the destruction, stick it to the Jews. Otherwise, they were not allowed. So what Jews would do is they would go to Har HaZeitim and look longingly over at Har HaBayit on a regular basis. The day, but the real day was on Hoshana Rabbah. That became a thing. That became a thing for a number of reasons. Number one, because according to Navi Zechariah, Har HaZeitim plays a central role in the messianic drama. In Zechariah Perek Yudalit Pasuk Aleph to Zion, it's 14:1-7. Hine Yom Baal Hashem, God, the day of judgment. Ah, the day of judgment. What else is the day of judgment? Yom Kippur. The day of judgment, the annual day of judgment, the day of judgment will come. V'chulak shalayach b'kirbeich, and your spoils will be divided. V'asafti et kol hagoyim el Yerushalayim lamilchama, and all of the nations will come to Jerusalem for war. This is the Haftorah from, I don't know who heard Haftorah last on the first day of Sukkot, but
Shabbos.
On Shabbos, rather. V'asafti et kol hagoyim el Yerushalayim lamilchama. V'nilkeda ha'ir, and the city will be conquered. V'nashasu abatim, and the houses will be split. V'nashim tishakavna, the women will be raped. I'm not going to go into all the things. Terrible things will happen. V'yatsa Hashem, and God will go out. V'nilcham b'goyim ahem, and will fight against the nations. Kiyom hilachmo b'yom krav, on a regular, as a full battle day. V'amdu raglav b'yom ahu, v'yuv, and God's kivayachol will stand on where? Al Har HaZeitim. Asher al pnei Yerushalayim mikedem, vivka Har HaZeitim, and Har HaZeitim will split. Mechetzio mizracha, half will go east and half will go west. In other words, not down the middle, but I guess it'll split right in front of the intercontinental hotel. Gai gadol gidola maod, and another valley will open up. Umashchatzi hahar tzafonav chetzio negba. I'm sorry, it is the other way. It cuts. The slice will be east-west, but it will open up in the middle. Half will go north, half will go south, and half will go towards the university, and half will go towards Talpiot. V'nastem gai har ki yagia gai harim el atzal. V'nastem, people will run away. Kashir nistam ibnei rosh ibnei uziyah mel chudan, so on and so forth. And then the Mashiach, and that's when the final judgment will come, and the nations will be thrown out of Jerusalem, and the final redemption will happen. What happened? What according to tradition, what happens on Sukkot acknowledges is what? What does it acknowledge? All of the nations coming to worship God. That's why there were 70 rut. According to Chazal, that's why there were 70. Why are there 70 sacrifices? 70 nations. So this merges. It happens on Sukkot anyways. The Navi is talking about Yom HaDin. It's inevitable that this is going to all come together on Hoshana Rabbah. Unless you think that this is something which doesn't find expression today, tomorrow morning when you get towards the end, after you go through according to the instructions we got, just one poor with three poor Shmendricks are going to walk around boom 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 boom, and then everybody's going to watch. But
at the end, take some time. As we get towards the end of the at the end of the service, there's a piyut which is called Omitz Yishacha, which was recited at the time on Har HaZeitim. And look at the words. Omen, Omen Yeshachaba, the faith of your salvation comes. Kol Dodi Hinezeba, the voice of my beloved. Where is it coming? Mikapetz al ha harim, on the mountains. Mivasko, Mivaser, Mivaser, Velmer. Ba Birivot Kitim, he comes at the head of armies. Lamod al, where? Har HaZeitim. Gishto b'shofar litkoa, because it's a messianic shofar. Tachtav har yibakea, Arya said, mivaser ve'omer. Dafak ve'itzitz v'zarach, the sun will come out, the fire will come out. Umash chatzia har mizrach, half the mountain's going to go one way, half the mountain's going to go the other way. Hekim milul noamo, uvahu v'chol kedoshav imo, God will come with all of his angels and the entire messianic drama will play itself out. So what happened was, all of these things from Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. There was a tradition already that Rosh Hashanah Rabbah was a tail end of Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah Rabbah was a time for judgment. That we're going to go through hard times, banging or waving. It's Machlokas Rishonim, or the willows. And then that merged with the, in Israel, and then it spread to the temple, to the synagogues, but the synagogues are still at the temple. And in parallel, people are going to Har HaZeitim to look at the Temple Mount and to bemoan the Temple Mount. But Har HaZeitim is also the place where all of this action is going to happen. So we go back to the Temple Mount. For other sources have it that there was a that they would do the hakafot around the Har HaZeitim. Exactly where is not clear. It could be in front of where the Intercontinental Hotel is. It's also possible it's further down. There's a spot on Har HaZeitim which is commonly thought to be where the Red Heifer service was performed, and it's really right opposite where the Beit HaMikdash was, the actual complex. So it could be there either. In any case, all of these ideas and all of these yearnings come together on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, on Har HaZeitim, with the hope that ultimately this will be the moment when God will split the mountain and those who have defiled or taken over the Har HaBayit will be sent away, and we will be judged and we will be redeemed. In addition, another element of judgment which comes in anyways all the time, and there is this tradition that water will flood out, and the Navi says this, will flood out of the mountain. What do we say on? It's actually, we put it off the Shmini Atzeret, but what is the significance of Sukkot? Source number 12, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, chapter 1, Mishnah 2. Bar Perkim Haolam Nidon. The world is judged in four stages. Bepesach al Tevuah, God judges the grain harvest and Pesach. Bat Seret al Perot, and on Shavuot, the Perot HaYilan, rather, the fruits of the trees. Barosh Hashanah, on Rosh Hashanah, Kol Be'olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron, that the entire world goes before him, kivnei maron, as like one sheep after the other, or as according to how others have argued, kidibim numerion, one by one, like you're counting your soldiers. But v'chag nidonim alamayim, and on Sukkot, water, the source of life, symbol of Torah, all of that is judged as well. So all of these motifs came and just fortified and empowered Rosh Hashanah Rabbah to turn it into something. Now, again, this is how people treated Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. You can understand why you have this outrageous statement that if you have to choose between not having Tkiat Shofar on Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, you begin to understand why somebody was able to say, choose Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Finally, Now, this, on the one hand, this, do I have one more? I should have one more text. Yes. Let me further go on. There's one more reason. There was one other tradition which reinforced this, the centrality of this moment on Hoshana Rabbah on Har HaZeitim. The Midrash in Eicha Rabbah, like, don't forget, all Midrashim are for this purposes are Eretz Israeli. Tells the following story. It pops up in a few places. Eser masaot nasa hashchina. God's presence in the context of exile from the temple went through 10 stages through which it became more distant, more increasingly distant from the sanctum sanctorum, from the holy of holies. Mikruv lekruv, from one cherub to another cherub. And from one cherub, it's a little bit anachronistic. There wasn't the cherub in the second temple, but umikruv lemiftan habayit, then it moved out from the holy of holies to the front of the main building of the temple. Umiftan habayit lakruvim, and then back to the kruvim. Uminakruvim leshara kadmoni, for to the east gate, and from the east gate to the chatzer, to the outer courtyard. U'me'achatzer, and from the outer courtyard to the roof of the Beit HaMikdash. And from the roof of the Beit HaMikdash to the altar, from the altar to the wall of the Beit HaMikdash, and from the wall of the Beit HaMikdash to the wall of the city, Shar Rachamim. And from the ear, Lahar HaZeitim. He waited and hovered on Har HaZeitim. What is the attracting what's the attractive function, factor, or characteristic, or quality, or element of the Beit HaMikdash? Is God's presence. And later, the Pesikta complements or completes the description and says, "Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Shalosh Shanim u'Mechetza, for 3.5 years after the during the stage of siege of Jerusalem, Shayu Asonim Kifim et Yerushalayim." That the enemy had encircled Jerusalem. Haita hashchina omedet al Har HaZeitim. The Shechina waited on Har HaZeitim. Vahaita korah b'chol yom. And would cry out every day, seek me, do tshuva. And from there, the Shechina left and went back to heaven. There is no question that the association of Har HaZeitim is the last location of the Shekhinah, and by implication, the first place the Shekhinah will come back on its way back to the Beit HaMikdash, clinched everything for the connection between, for this moment on Har HaZeitim. Because the Beit HaMikdash is where the Shekhinah is and not a building. So de facto, by being on Har HaZeitim, you're in the Beit HaMikdash. You're redoing everything the Beit HaMikdash, at least virtually, everything the Beit HaMikdash was supposed to accomplish. By the way, Ashkenazi shuls believed that the Shekhinah was in its full plenitude in the synagogue. So you had, it comes expression in a different way. This doesn't have to all be consistent. Point being that all of this came together to create in Hoshana Rabbah a moment of intense piety, intense spirituality, on the one hand, atonement for the Jewish people, an expression for the hopes of the Jewish people for redemption, a certain amount of shvalcha maskal agoyim vis-a-vis those who had taken Jerusalem, and all of that was poured into all of that got poured into to Hoshana Rabbah. Interestingly, there's another element of Hoshana Rabbah, which actually it's not a tension with each other, but they both coexist sort of uneasily. I think I mentioned the fact that
that Sukkot is the celebration of the entire world. In fact, on the contrary, the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not days of judgment just for Jews; they're days of judgment for the world. So, in the 14th century, Rabbi Isaac Tirnow, one of the rabbis who devoted his life to the reconstruction of German Jewry after the massacres of hundreds of thousands of Jews who were accused of being responsible for the Black Plague, made the following observation. It's probably around 1370, 1380. Lama nikra shemo Hoshana Rabbah. Why was it called Hoshana Rabbah? Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu LaAbraham. God told Abraham, Ani yachid, I am unique, vata yachid, and you're a unique person. Etein levanecha, yom hamyuchad lechaper bavonotehem. I'm going to give your children a day, a unique day, just for them, for their sins to be atoned. Vizeu Hashanah Rabbah. You would have thought Yom Kippur, but Yom Kippur is not a day just for Jews. After Kedusha, we said that one of the piyutim that we say, it's an Ashkenazi piyut, the Ayatayu Kol Avdecha, that the hope is that all of mankind know, should find out that Kippur is a day of judgment for everybody, and they should all accept the yoke of heaven. So after going through a gematria, he says, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Avraham, Im Ein Kapara Levanecha Barosh Hashanah, Yeah, Yom Kippur. If your children don't have aren't atoned for on Rosh Hashanah, so Yom Kippur will work. V'im lav, and if that doesn't work as part of the humanity, the rest of humanity, yeah, b'Hoshana Rabbah. It'll be on Hoshana Rabbah, because that's just for you. It reminds you what we said about Shemini Atzeret. But here it's Hoshana Rabbah. B'zeu achduto shel shmi, b'zeu Hoshana Rabbah. That's my name will be one, and that's Hoshana Rabbah, which means that, interestingly, if we look at Sukkot as the day that we celebrate the atonement and the forgiveness that we hope that we had achieved on Yom Kippur, then Shmini Atzeret is the day that we celebrate the atonement that we got on Hoshana Rabbah. See how it plays together? Certainly, you could find a hint of this in A, the fact that on Hoshana Rabbah, we allude to parts of God's name because God's name is not 100% whole yet, right? And at the end of the prophecy, the passage from Zechariah that describes the day of judgment, how does it end? Chapter 14, verses 8 to 9. And it shall come to that day that living water will leave from Jerusalem. Part will go to the sea and part will go to the Dead Sea. And it'll flow in the spring, and I'm sorry, in the summer, in the winter. V'haya Hashem lemelech al kol haaretz bayom ahu yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. It'll all come together, if you assume it happened in Hoshana Rabbah, on Hoshana Rabbah. Ka and Hu will come together, Yudke Vavke. God's name will be unified, which is not necessarily a mystical thing. All of mankind will be defeated and then restored. The temple will be restored and the world will be redeemed. And all that on Hoshana Rabbah. So you begin to realize what lies behind this day. There are levels upon levels upon levels upon levels. Thank you very much. Good kvittel is what we say, pit katava. A good, you may have a little, what's it called? A post-it. You should have a nice little post-it that says Zakai. And next year we should do this in person.
So Jeffrey, Hebrew U has a leg up over Bar Ilan. Are you going to?